time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Eric Nash.
I'm Rick Ingham.
I'm Robert Black.
I'm Dave Pallas.
Welcome back, everybody.
Well, you know, I did my best. It wasn't much. I couldn't feel, but I tried to touch. Took way more effort than it needed to.
I didn't come to fool you. So that means we're here for minute 123, which starts with Dan and Lori having post-heroic sex and ends with a fire in the sky.
And even though it all went wrong, we'll stand before the Lord of Song with nothing on our tongues, but wow, this song or this minute just I got nothing.
It just keeps going.
Oh, I got notes.
Oh, I got notes too, but okay. I will remind everybody, when I first saw this movie, I saw it in IMAX from the third row.
Wow. And you were like, that's Patrick Wilson's butt. Much of his butt.
So you tell us what was wrong with the lighting on that butt there.
Yeah. I think his butt kind of suffers from the same weird quality that hers did that I talked about last minute. That just the ass crack just doesn't look right. It looks like it's digitally painted in there.
Yeah. The only thing worse than watching erotic art in front of your friends is having to podcast about and scrub back and forth looking for this worthwhile content. You know, I said it earlier tonight, but, you know, with Titanic Minute, like, you know, when they had the sex scenes, the host bugged out, and then they got, like, maybe their significant others or some ladies do. We're muscling through this.
Yeah.
Like, we're not, great. We're like, oh, you know, we're not, no one's qualified to talk about this. Not even Zack Snyder. All right? We're kidding.
Oh, I have a Zack Snyder quote about this scene that I'll share later.
That piece of shit. I think the most annoying thing is that the moon now goes to the other, like, left port, or from the left port to the right port.
Mm-hmm.
It just, like I said, it makes this minute sound like it's like they recorded it and they were like, let's just keep going, let's just see what happens. And then they were like, all right, and then the editor's like, all right, Zach, well, we can cut, like, you know, about three quarters of all this. He's like, no, keep it in. I'm like,
keep all
really?
Of it.
And the wide shot? Yeah, keep the wide shot. Really, we really want to see all that. He's like,
slow it down a bit.
Actually, this close-up at the beginning of this minute's kind of nice. It's framed well. It's lit okay. Better than the wide shot.
As Lori leans back and Dan facilitates a transition to where he is now on top.
Mm. But before that, we have a
transition. Great word. Mm-hmm.
There's like a weird bit of around second 20... It just goes to like a close up. I think it's of her boot. And it's this weird mix of like vinyl and something skin shiny. And maybe a bit of the owl.
That's a close up on his butt.
Well, right before that, it's just shiny? Like the screen is filled with nothing but black with little tiny hints of light. And obviously it works in the movie because it's panning through and you need a little bit of a break. Visually, your eyes just need a chance to just catch their breath. In the minute format,
it's gotta be her leg because the boot. But it's a weird close up
for all of you who breathe through your eyes.
Well, yeah,
I guess.
And all of you who want that butt and boot fetish, there's that kink. We got it. We got it right here for you.
First of all, top notch flexing from Dan. Just the way he's clenching those muscles.
God, like, yeah.
Good job on you, bud. But I get so distracted by the fact that Lori, in all the yada-yaing of her taking off her outfit, either took the boots off, took the outfit off, and then put the boots back on, or her outfit works in such a way that she can take it off completely without removing the boots.
If you had a superhero outfit, would you not make individual parts or remove just this purpose?
Well, I think we're getting back into the Spider-Man outfit situation.
Because I would.
You know, where does the mask connect?
Oh, yeah. Hers is, you know, once you unzip it down the front, it's just like peeling off, I guess, two halves of a swimsuit. I mean, she's basically wearing that, just a swimsuit.
Maybe the zipper goes all the way around underneath and around the back, and so it just pulls off and the boots are separate.
I'd hate for something to get caught in that zipper.
Like I said, going commando, it's a bold move.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing to zip.
I mean, but... she doesn't have pants that go down to the boots, like they clip on with like those garter situations.
Yeah.
But still, like getting out of the suit, unless it does zip all the way around.
Or it's like one of those baby onesies with the Velcro down there, so she just pull it up.
Like it's called a Mobius zipper.
Or it's got snaps like a pair of Spanx. Are they called pairs of Spanx? I don't know.
Do they have snaps?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Like down there in the undercarriage, they snap together and hold in place.
Malin Ackerman's going to snap her back in half with all of this flexing.
It's the classic comic book pose.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed when she's, I guess when he's on top and she's, you know, their movements just don't feel in sync. Like his fake thrusting and speed is very minimal. He's not doing a whole lot, but she's reacting as if the thrusts are coming a lot faster and with more impact. So they just don't match. It's like they're doing different sex scenes.
Well, I mean, it does pick up. The pace does accelerate as we go through the minute.
Do you think he was there for her close-ups?
That's why I'm saying I feel like they filmed for the close-ups and they didn't realize like the wide shots were going to be used, because that's what I say, the wide shots where it feels something feels off, and it just feels like all the close-ups with the cinematography feel fine, you know, as long as this damn minute goes on. But yeah, the wide shots feel, you know, and then then we hit like 4 seconds, and again it's like second 40, and it's just like they're still going at it. Like, what else is to be gained about this scene?
Well, we'll see.
Well, you need a strong finish.
If it doesn't end in fire, it doesn't end.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say this about the fire. I like the way it's executed in this movie better than the way it's executed in the comic book, because in the comic book, it's clumsy. It's like she backs into it. Here, something is happening, and she is just reaching out to slap whatever's closest by.
Yeah. I think
she could have hit a missile.
Yeah.
Thank goodness she didn't.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Like, we just saved lives, but we destroyed a building.
Yeah. Having
blew the top of the Chrysler building off, but.
Eh. Yeah. Like, having the light button next to the missile button, that's just like, you gotta arm that stuff. Mm-hmm. No, this is my anecdote. This is my anecdote about listening to that song for that long. Okay. All right. If you ever went to Christian Mass, you get the hymn book and you're singing a psalm or a song and it's got like 4 or 5 verses in it. And like 9 out of 10 times you're going to do the first or second verse. Everyone knows that probably by heart because you've been at church so much. And I've been at Catholic school forever. So like we get it. But sometimes like the musical director or the priest like get in their head that like the guy, let's go a little longer. And they hit those later verses. And it, like, the 2 times it happens is it happens either in the beginning of Mass when it's like the procession has come in and everyone's like in their position, the priest, the deacon, the altar assistants, they're all there in position, and yet they go to like the next verse. And now it's like, well, no one really knows this verse enough. So now we're kind of dancing through it. So like it starts the Mass off on a little rocky start. Or it's during the communion sections. We're about 45, 50 minutes into Mass. And you've gone up, you got communion, you're back down, you're like kneeling, and you're kind of like, maybe you're singing along to the song to kind of help pass the time, because you gotta watch everybody else gotta go up and get their communion. And so you're singing the songs, and I'm a good little boy, I'm singing my songs. But like, yeah, we hit the third verse, and now people you can tell are kind of like humming along now. They're not like singing it. And then you get the fourth verse, and it's like the lyrics aren't even that good anymore. It's like the writer was just kind of really phoning in. And then and then I swear to God in church that like they'll hit the fifth verse, which is like, it's like not supposed to be said because it's Latin. It's honest to God Latin. And I like turn around and I look up at the choir, like, why? What is this for? New song or just hum. Don't do this. No one knows Latin. This is New Jersey. No one knows Latin here. No one. And that's just like, that's what it feels like when, for me, like listening to this song and like in this scene, like the like I just, oh man, it's just, it's just, yeah, it's just like, it feels like we're going into actual like porn, and it's just like, I'm not in the mood for this. I'm in the mood for a superhero comic book film. And I feel like that panel, that one page panel in the comics, gets the emotion across so quickly. And I just feel like just Snyder just like was like, gotta show this. Like, we could show a little bit of titillation, pun included, but it feels like we just go so long, and the why it just feels messy, man.
All right, speaking of feelings and messy,
yeah,
I have a question for everybody. Real or fake? I'm pretty sure Dan is having a genuine experience here, but do you think Lori is sharing in that genuine experience, or do you think she's putting on an act? What's your assessment?
Based on Ackerman's performance?
Yeah.
It seems fake. I think we're supposed to assume it's real, though, because that's the point.
Yeah, it's like so fake, but in a Zack Snyder back-assward way, it's real.
It's cinematically real.
Yeah.
That's why we get
I think
close
it's up. Real.
This is the guy who wrote and directed Sucker Punch. Just let that sink in. Yeah. And the nonsense that movie was.
Are you speaking ill of Sucker Punch?
Dude, I bought the CD, all right? I listened to the music, all right? Don't at me. I gave it a goddamn shot. And I'm sitting in my car like, why did I do this?
Very positive.
Why did I do this? Like, it's just, what? I didn't get anything out of that movie. It's just weird. It felt weird watching that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially now that you know that Poe Dameron was the creepy guy in that movie.
Poe Dameron, John Hamm, and no one feels good in this movie, and no one felt like they're in a better place in that movie. Just felt uncomfortable. You're like, oh man, God, and you're like, and DC gave, you know, Warner Brothers is like, yeah, do our comic book movies. You're an edgelord. You're an edgelord with a Jesus complex. Go.
See, I love that we get their mutual orgasm acting, and I love that it's still like we've got confident, cool Dan, but you can't hide that dopey O face that he has. Like someone earlier said, dad face.
That's dad face. That's
so it's he's managed to get to this point, and then there's Dan Dreiberg.
Yep.
He's back. You can't hide in that moment, you know? You can't hide who you really are with your O-face. Like, that's...
Now, just imagine this. 15 feet tall.
Oh, 3 feet.
Like, 10 feet in front of you.
Oh,
because
man.
I saw this in IMAX in the third row.
Just you sit really, back and think, man.
You really don't get the full effect watching it on the small screen of just how derpy that O face is. Like Malin Ackerman, she's selling it. Like she's no stranger to this sort of thing. Like we talked about that the other day.
Yeah.
But you know, Patrick Wilson, I didn't want to see the guy from the Insidious movies finishing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Think about it. Women have to look at you at parts, you know?
God bless them.
You can look at the lady and you're like, man, she's looking great. And then she's like, you go, oh God, she's gotta look at when I look in the mirror. Oh no!
You should have kept the mask on.
Oh yeah, I gotta wear a mask.
Seriously.
Like, have a bigger mask. She sees that. Oh no.
What if he wanted her to wear the mask?
Okay, that would be weird.
She's already wearing the boots. I don't.
Be like, hey Lori, could you wear my night owl mask? And is it all right if I call you Hollis?
Yeah, can you tie up your hair in a bun just to hide it?
Call me kiddo. Call me kiddo.
Sport champ.
Say you're proud of me.
God, man. Oh, boy.
That's both horrible and I want to see it now.
Yeah.
Maybe I would feel better if him like saying stuff. She's like, shut up. You know, maybe I would have had a little bit more laugh to it. I don't know. Or he's a little clumsy, you know? He's confident in crime fighting, but still a little uncomfortable. Just like, oh jeez, oh Lori, I gotta clean this up later.
I did wonder about that, but I wasn't really gonna bring it up. Just
he
has a button for that.
Ah, good.
You know, at least he didn't reach into a drawer and pull out a white sack with a bunch of magic marker drawn all over it. Like, Dan, this smells awful. I just can you just put it on, just for me.
Just God pretend. Yeah. Just put it apart. Now, what does that mask look like that he's drawn?
He just drew the blobs on it.
Rorschach's yeah, but what are the shape of the blobs for that O face?
I don't know. Probably like a dick.
Does it look like a butterfly?
Just a nice cock and ball outline. He probably used a permanent marker. That way, whoever wears the mask is just so high as a kite they don't even care. Like.
I wanted to cut to the second 51 with the newsstand guy and one of the buyer guys. Looking at I'm kind of curious, what time of night is this? Like, because I'm like, when's this night? When's this like guy in this newsstand ever close?
It's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Hey.
It would be late in the night because we saw Dan and Lori were sitting down to watch like the evening news. Then they had their awkward sex scene, and then they both went to bed.
This
frustrated.
Was after he woke up at like 3, right?
Yeah, then he gets up in the morning because he can't sleep. Not in the morning, but like sometime in the evening to early morning, he gets up.
So it is 6 o'clock in the morning.
It could be the morning. Yeah, it could be the just before dawn, I guess.
Now, we don't get to see what those guys say to each other after they look up at the cloud. I just can imagine either the newspaper seller or the customer would be like, hey, think someone's having sex up there? And the other one would be like, why would you say that?
He just knows. Anytime you see something weird in a cloud.
Yeah, someone's banging up there.
Well, I mean, I was thinking of them a little bit more like in universe, where they're just like, you know, you see a light in the sky, you're like, oh my god, please don't be like some commie missile coming at us,
or aliens that probing someone.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
I mean,
boy,
someone is aliens. Getting probed.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Boy, they're probing. Yeah.
Way up in the butthole, Morty. Though not in this instance.
We don't know that.
Not from that angle.
That's very true. Can neither confirm nor deny.
So I mentioned that I had a kind of a quote from Zack Snyder about this scene and everything. I found a quick little video on, it was from MTV.com, and it was from, I think they did a show once called Spoilers.
Yeah. Nope. With Kevin Smith?
No, different, completely different, unrelated from Kevin Smith's Spoilers. Because this would have been, it was posted, the article was posted in February of 2009. So it would have been right before the movie came out. And I'm assuming they showed maybe a few clips of things to this small studio audience. And they got to ask Zack Snyder point blank, like maybe questions about it. So I'm assuming that's kind of why it's called Spoilers. I don't know. But small studio audience, and someone asked him, was it awkward to film? This scene in particular. I'm assuming they showed them parts of it or maybe a small clip of it. And, you know, his response was, you know, of course it was awkward asking your friends to get naked. And then he goes on to say, you know, talks about them. They're professionals and all this stuff. And they made it really easy. They made it comfortable and all that stuff. But he said, he follows it up with, you know, they're not too hard to look at. And he kind of paused, and then he says, you know, it's not like they're these big fat people. And there's a groan in the audience.
Good.
And then he kind of takes a second and says, you know, which could also have been its own thing. So obviously that's not, you know, cool of Zack Snyder to say something like that. But it definitely seemed like this, he was not ready to talk about this scene yet because he didn't have like a prepared statement about this scene and working on it and it being awkward, because typically with something like this, I think you would just get, oh, you know, yeah, it was a little weird, but you know, they're professionals and
that's it.
You know, that's all you got to say.
He was fine until he was just like, yeah. By the way, I enjoy looking at them when they were naked and they ain't fat. Like it's like he was doing fine, you know? Oh, they're my best. You know, they're good friends. You go, oh, okay. So it's respectable. He doesn't just see them as like, you know, oh, just some actors I had to deal with. Oh, they're my friends. And you're like, oh, I felt bad that, you know, we had this, but we weren't, we're working together and they were professional. So like, everything's fine. And then he like had to throw this, like, they're acting professional. I'm about to say something very unprofessional.
Yeah. And you could tell it, like, as he was saying it, he didn't know where he was going when he started talking about it. He just, it was just word vomit. And I honestly think it just got away from him. And then he tried to save it, you know, by saying, well, that could be its own thing. So
I feel like that line he said about them, like, that was where he said to some confidant, like some buddy while they were like, you know, at, sure, like, yeah, like back at his place. And it's like, oh yeah, I filmed this and that. And I'll tell you, hey, ain't too bad looking at, you know, he had a laugh. So like, you remind, like, oh, that was a funny line I said. I'll just say it here and get them to laugh. And it's like, yeah, no, nah, it's not, you know, you say that in some super confidence with some people. You don't just tell, like, yeah, a regular audience that, like, is like, is this okay? Yeah. Here, how about this? I got this right here from MrSkin.com. Summary: when a mysterious someone begins murdering their fellow costume crime fighters, they begin to uncover a shocking conspiracy. Malin Ackerman gets naked 3 times, burying both boobs and butt. That's something to watch, men. but this is Mr. Skin, and you go, that's fine. He can make that pun. He's all,
they know their audience.
In that context, his professional, the professional thing you expect is him to make a naked pun joke. So you're like, this is all, you know, that we came here for that. But yeah, for like, yeah, exactly, like, you know, serious talk with the director, him being like, yeah, I got my rocks off looking at him. Yeah, I did.
So anything else on the sex of it all?
I got one.
Okay.
So later in the movie, they're playing All Along the Watchtower, and they time the two people approaching Veidt's headquarters to two writers were approaching. This song has the song with nothing, the line with nothing on my tongue. I don't see any oral.
Mm. Oh, well, I mean, in the scene's defense, there was nothing on their tongue.
Right.
if there were oral, they would have to change the lyric to with something on my tongue. And I'm glad you brought that up because, see, as I mentioned the other day, there's no physical foreplay to this. They save the people from the burning building, and I guess that takes the place of any sort of physical sensual contact before the act of insertion takes place.
The adrenaline high was foreplay.
Yeah. Which in no uncertain terms lets us know that the act of saving people, of going out and vigilanteing, or however you say that, being a vigilante, gets Lori's there's no way to say this. Gets her juices flowing.
Huh. Yeah.
Like that is that is a concrete proof.
Sure. Well, and she, you know, he like we talked about with flipping the dialogue, giving him her lines from the book and vice versa. I think as soon as he gives her that look, stands up, and she's now seeing, oh, this guy was a wad of cookie dough earlier when we tried to do this, but now I can tell he's, you know, he's raring to go. And so that may be kind of enough to turn her on and say.
She looks over at him and she can see that codpiece just straining under the pressure.
She sees those grommets coming loose.
He looked over at her handling that stack of cups as she puts it into the cabinet. And he's like, oh, man.
It's just,
Hollis, here we go.
I'm just saying, with the direction of the scene, it's like the beginning was some subtext a little bit to hit, and then we just go right to wide shot the text of it all, and then we cut to like the subtext at the end of the climax. I'm like, nah, man, you already showed a wide shot. We know exactly what's happening. I think that's what bugs me. It just feels like we're like classy, and then it's like kind of almost crass, and then. Like the right at the end of the fire, like, see what we did there? No, I saw everything you did. Shut like up. I saw Jack everything Snyder you movie. Did.
But it's too late. I've seen everything.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. You could, as I said, you could have had the close up still and done like, you know, about like a half of that of close up the close ups. The white shots just don't feel right. That's all. And maybe that's what it is too. We add in the possible CGI butts, who knows?
You know what it is? It's because they wanted to set the scene to music. It works on a comic book page because you can do 12 or whatever, 9 small inset boxes with a close-up of their faces, close-up of their uniforms crumpled up. But when you need to stretch that scene, that page, you need to stretch it out into, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes to pair with a song, then you can't just do 6 close-ups and off to the next scene.
Interesting note about the comic book. Dan doesn't lose the cape. He wears the cape the entire time.
Let me see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the cape part with of his shirt?
Back.
Now, granted, he does lose the cape on page 28, but on page 27, he's standing there still wearing the cape. Like, yeah, his belt has come undone, but she is pretty much bare for the world to see, and he's still more or less covered up.
You know what this scene doesn't have, looking at the comic book again, is that shot of them both standing up to match his dream from earlier. The movie has the dream.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't have that shot.
Honestly, that I would have taken, that's a wide shot they should have actually had. I feel like I said, like the first, like I said, what's it? You have the panels here. First button is the smoke screen. And then the second line is the lights off. And yeah, I think, I don't know, man. You giving me this scene, I would have probably directed it better. I wouldn't have been a hack.
You know, I just thought about with the way it's done in the book, it never looks like they even have sex in the book. They're embracing each other. He's kissing her neck. There might be some making out, that kind of thing. But they're both just standing.
Yeah, you just have to interpret the fire.
That's the classy subtext. Little subtext there, you know, like let the reader just understand and imagine. But then Zack Snyder's like, no. I need to show it all.
Well, when he's not writing Lost Girls, Alan Moore is subtle.
You know, I don't even know what The Fountainhead's about. But all I know is that it's some old book, and I don't know if he's ready for that. Whatever his next Snyder project is.
Now, Dave, do you have the book in front of you by any chance?
No, it's back at my parents' house in my little library.
I just find it interesting because 27 is the page where most of what we're talking about this minute
is. I found that on Google.
Page 28 is everything that's going to be covered on Thursday.
Well, it's not, though. They skipped that scene.
Well, they scrunch it down really small. They cut a lot of the important dialogue out. But on what would be page 29 is an excerpt from a article written by Daniel Dryberg. It's called Blood from the Shoulder of Pallas. So I think it's appropriate that you're here.
I think it's appropriate here because I used to blog about porn.
That works too.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
The only other thing, back to what I think, what Rick, you were saying, get the juices flowing. And the
sorry, just like involuntary. No.
Just rip that Band-Aid right off, Eric.
But I want to go back. I think about the alley scene that we started this week off talking a little bit about. At the end of that, you know, their juices are flowing. Mm-hmm. And they almost seem like they want to kiss there.
Yeah.
Their shoulders are touching. And
now, speaking of the female perspective, before we started recording, you all asked me to go ask Julia what she thought of this scene. Mm-hmm. Would you like to know what she told me?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm gonna hold on. Let me sit back. Let me get comfortable. All right. Got my, all right. Good. Go.
Julie didn't have much to say about the performances as much as the setting of this scene. She was distracted by the fact that they decided to have sex in a chair and then lying against the side of the cold metal interior of the owl ship. And she found it so disagreeable, the fact that they would have intercourse in such an uncomfortable and cold environment, that it took her completely out of the scene.
Huh.
And it was so distracting. And between the couch and the owl ship, they just have really poor decision-making as far as the spots where they engage in lovemaking, or at least the attempt of it. And I don't think it's until the end of the movie when they finally get it somewhat right.
That seems realistic.
Yeah, but, I mean,
like she understood when... it was a heat of the moment thing.
Sure,
like
sure, yeah.
It was the heat of the moment, telling them what their heart meant, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Gotta love Asia.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but it's still just nothing about this environment looks appetizing or comfortable, and it was the one detail that dominated her observations in this scene.
I mean, I won't go into detail, but I've had sex in some pretty uncomfortable places. Sometimes you just gotta, you know,
back in Volkswagen,
make it happen.
I got a little joking.
Yeah.
I feel like yesterday some of you saved some Hallelujah material. Do we want to cover any of that? Since
let's see,
I think I got. I know all my. Talk about that. But yeah, I got my. What I wanted to get said, I said it.
Mm.
So
yeah,
boom.
The only last thing I'd say about it is that for this minute, this exact minute, it's damn near perfectly bisected by, you know, a good chunk of a verse, and then the rest of it. For the first half, and the rest of it is the Hallelujah repeating.
Yeah,
the word, and that makes sense for the climax, you know.
Well, sure. And the song cuts out orgasmic for that second at 47, just in time for her to breathe.
Huh. So, interesting note about the song itself: it reached number one on the charts in France and New Zealand, but here in America, it topped at number 20 on the Billboard Hot 100.
What version?
The Leonard Cohen version.
Oh. This Gladwell stuff, I didn't get the impression it did even that high originally.
Mm-hmm. It also got to number 2 in Switzerland, number 3 in Spain, and number 4 in Finland. And that is the last place where it got in the top 10. Everywhere from Austria down to Portugal, it's all 13 and lower.
Now, there's a quote here, an essay written by Michael Bartel about Hallelujah. Calls the Cohen's original version so hyper serious that it's almost satire. Which I guess things fits the Snyder film.
Yeah. The only last two things are the you know, just that when he died just over 2 years ago now, Cohen, when he died, yeah. That's when it you know, this of all his songs, you know, I believe you know, made its comeback.
This version.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this version in particular, but I'm sure other versions were used as well. We're on the radio more as well.
Yeah. Bob Dylan is quoted as saying about the song, "It is a beautifully constructed melody that steps up, evolves, and slips back all in a quick time. But this song has a connective chorus, which when it comes in has a power all of its own. The secret chord and its point blank, I know you better than you know yourself aspect of the song has plenty of resonance for me."
I guess there are alternate versions of the song too.
Oh yeah.
On April 16th, 2010, the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra and the Richard Eaton Singers, conducted by Jack Everly, premiered a new arrangement for orchestra and chorus by Claude Lapalme. And also in 2010, the Maccabees of Yeshiva University released Voices from the Heights with an a cappella version of Hallelujah set to the Hebrew words of the Shabbat liturgical poem Lechadodi.
Well, that's a perfect fit.
I just wanted to say Yeshiva.
Well, I think what Travis, you were kind of more going after, and I remember hearing about this not long after I first heard Buckley's version, and I was learning a little bit about, oh, there's this other version by Leonard Cohen, which I probably knew his name, but just what the Wikipedia page says, he wrote around 80 draft versions.
It took him 5 years to write
80 draft verses for the song. So he had all these so many different verses for it, but he did whittle them down for this one recording that we're hearing most of here, or some of at least.
Oh, here's an interesting one. Who do you think would be the last person you would expect to cover this song? Just ballpark it.
Ozzy Osbourne.
All right, Weird Al, Ozzy, Dave. What do you think?
Oh, Smash Mouth.
Okay, because American entertainer Adam Sandler performed an off-color parody of Hallelujah in December 2012 at Madison Square Garden in New York City as part of the 12-12-12, the concert for Sandy relief. Sandler's version contained numerous references to Hurricane Sandy and contemporary events in local culture, sports, and politics.
Like, I have that album. I don't remember an Adam Sandler track. Anything else on the song, on the sex?
Neither the song nor the sex.
I'm
I would want to lament the absence of the scene after the sex.
I've given it all I've got, Captain. I don't think I can give it any more.
Let's see. So Robert, this is your first time on the show.
It is.
Well,
third, but yes.
Yeah. What is your history with Watchmen?
I saw it in the theater. It wasn't on IMAX, Rick, but it was at a theater opening weekend, probably on Friday. Depends on whether I worked that. I'd have to look back at that year, see if I had Fridays off. Otherwise, that weekend. And then I had only watched it one other time until today. I watched it when it came out on DVD. Mm. I have the ultimate cut like on my watch list. I keep meaning to watch it, but it's just so long, so I haven't gotten to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like I read the book as a teenager and then read it again as an adult like a decade after that, and when the movie was coming out. And until then, I had today watching it right before we started recording for a few days ago. I watched it for the third time all the way through. That's all I'd seen the movie. And I like it. I think parts of it are overwrought, but I think parts of it are necessary changes to make it a movie, and it keeps a lot of the like chapter structure still intact fairly well.
Yeah.
And the ending, I think, is better than a big monster.
Yeah.
Very cool. Eric and I will be back, tomorrow and Friday. I think it's just going to be the two of us. So definitely want to say thanks to you gentlemen for, braving the sex scene with us. Not like Titanic minute having to.
Those guys joke about how immature and goofy they are. And it's like, well, yeah, but what about this? They can't handle it. Well, we handled it. We did it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Put the mouth to the mic and we did it.
Blah, blah, blah. On that note.
Is that what we did?
Why don't we go around, everyone tell, share your plugs real quick, and we'll get out of here.
Certainly. People can find more of me by going to madmaxminute.com. There you will find links and posts for all three seasons of the Mad Max Minute that currently exist. You'll also find links to all the social media. Come back for March 2019, where the Mad Max Minute will dive into Fury Road 1 minute at a time.
And for me, you can go to lemmingdrops.com to see links to Groundhog Day Project, my blog, Michael Myers Minute, Dave Made a Minute. There's no links on there to the upcoming the Room Minute, but that does have an Instagram and a Twitter already, which does post.
And you can find me over at 5 Minutes of Mystery, where I talk about Mystery Men and how that movie should honestly get more praise, and it doesn't, but I'm working on it, and we cover that in 5 minutes at a time.
Nice. All right, Eric, anything else?
I don't think so.
All right, well, we will be back tomorrow, but until then, who watches the Watchmen?
We do. We do.
Watchmen are over.
Well, I couldn't, I tried to touch, no, wait, hold on. Damn it. Fuck.
Yep. Doing it.
Rewind.
Yep.